always expect something good on your lunch hour, connecting faith with life.
Here we are again on Connecting Faith. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Neil Stavem. Always enjoy the opportunity to get together with you here for the noon hour, and glad that you've taken out a bit of time to listen in. A reminder, of course, if you have to get back to work or something taking your time, you can't hear the full program, you can always catch it on the podcast online at myfaithradio.com, and I encourage you to check that out for past programs as well, that and know that you can pass it on to a friend if it's a topic that's of interest to you, and know that there'd be a friend or family member that could benefit from it. You can always pass it along. It's a simple, easy to do. It's myfaithradio.com and the Connecting Faith show page. Ryan Thomas there at the controls. Welcome back again, sir.
It's so good to be with you, sir. And I was, as you were describing the podcast, I was thinking it's like passing the baton of Connecting Faith, but it's actually a lot easier because if you've run a relay race, passing the baton is not actually that easy.
That brought up a rather, you know, sort of painful moment in my, because we're going to be talking about school, right? Education today.
So. There's a memory that's enmeshed with that?
I don't think I dropped the, I probably did. I don't remember. So I don't think I was actually on the relay team. I think that was probably what
it
was.
So maybe a misplaced memory.
I ran cross country where you could run slow and it sort of counted for something. We're going to talk with a noted educator. She's been teaching people of all ages how to discover and use their natural inborn learning style strengths to succeed in virtually any situation. Popular speaker, and in fact, is one of the favorites. Focused on the family, they've done some of their best of broadcasts. She's been one of the top people there, and was on Focus not too long ago, and we're just honored to have Cynthia Tobias with us here on Connecting Faith. She has written several books. I think her latest is Middle School, The Inside Story, which, you and I could have a good time talking about that, couldn't we?
I think so.
But we'll talk with Cynthia instead.
Good.
We're going to reference one of the books, The Way We Learn, How to Discover and Teach Your Child's Strengths. Cynthia also has spent some time in law enforcement, so beyond your P's and Q's, young man.
Okay.
Cynthia, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We're looking forward to spending some time just talking about how we learn and maybe some of the ways that we set up barriers for ourselves or how we can be more effective and successful in that process. And by the way, if you're listening today and this is an area that is of particular interest to you, or you have a family that maybe, school kids struggling at one level or another, we'd love to have you join the conversation. You can queue up at any time at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. And Cynthia, maybe just by way of a bit of background, you wanted to be a writer early on. You spent some time in law enforcement. When did you become interested in understanding learning styles? And you've been a teacher for a while as well.
Right. Well, right out of college, I began teaching high school, and I was pretty excited because I knew that kids would be excited to learn. And I found out right away in teaching in the public schools at the high school level, they weren't excited to learn. They looked like school was a prison sentence. And I right away started to try to figure out, how do we make this better? I mean, I'm even bored, and I'm the teacher, so maybe there's a way to try to challenge these kids. And so the first 4 years of teaching, I taught a total of 8 years in the high school classroom. I was busy experimenting, and then I stumbled across, literally almost stumbled across at Seattle Pacific University, one of the experts in learning styles that had come out, and this was back in 1980, had come out to talk to us about how many different ways there are to learn and teach. And that just revolutionized the way that I taught. And that made probably the biggest difference. That was a huge turning point in my life.
We have come to know a bit about that, and I know we'll kind of unpack some of it here during the hour together. But I'm curious to know, is this something that's sort of evolving and developing, or have these learning styles sort of been defined and everything we need to know, it's readily available?
Well, it's a little bit of both. What I did with my graduate degree is I tell people I sort of rented a place on the intellectual cul-de-sac. There's some solid empirical research that's been around for a long, long time. That's a little bit boring to read, but it forms a really solid foundation. And then how we've used it evolves, continues to evolve. But there are some basic tenets that have stayed the same and been researched in ways that are just, you know, absolutely empirical and great. So finding out how to apply them, obviously, with the culture and as things change, will always change a little. But the basic fundamental concepts of who we are and how we were designed from the very beginning, including the moment we got our DNA, we got some hardwiring, and then just figuring out what our strengths are, how to use them, how to make the most of them to overcome some limitations. That's powerful, powerful information for our kids especially.
Well, just as I was looking through the book, The Way We Learn, The Way They Learn, How to Discover and Teach Your Child's Strengths, it came out a number of years ago, I think, probably, and she's written Cynthia's written 11 or so books anyway, and frequently on radio, and we're honored to have her with us today. But you describe, you know, a typical classroom and how that tends to maybe work against those with learning styles different than the sit still, learn quietly, work independently, demonstrate knowledge sequentially. All those, that's kind of how we envision, I guess, what education should look like. But what have we learned, and why isn't that always the best method for everyone?
Well, you know, I went back to work every summer when I was teaching. I'd go back to work in the American business, you know, to find out, am I preparing my kids for the world? And what I discovered right away is what you and I both know, and that is that you get hired for pretty much everything you got in trouble for in school. Because outside in the real world, the human resources departments are looking for employees with good social interaction, high energy level, independent thinking skills. You know, we not only don't foster those in the classroom, we actively discourage that. And it was that realization right away that made me figure out, wow, all the things that we're requiring of them in that classroom, sitting still and paying attention and having to teach a lecture and all that, none of that really translates very well into the real world. And so part of our challenge in education, frankly, is figuring out who the customer is and how to serve that customer. And, you know, teachers will resist a little bit when we first say, you know, the students are the customer in education, because isn't the customer always right? And you can't let students be in charge. But if you think about it, as customers of retail stores especially, we don't have any control over the store or the hours, or we can't get by with bad behavior. But the fact that we're the customer means that retail institution is always looking for ways to make us want to keep coming back. And in education, we seem to be doing just the opposite. Kids can't wait to get out. And then, you know, adults that I run into say, wow, I would rather do just about anything than go back to school, because they remember how bad it was. So we've got it sometimes a little bit backwards.
Well, and from your perspective, you mentioned that even as a teacher early on, I mean, you were bored too. And it's not the teachers have their frustrations too, don't they? That they're maybe in a system that they know is not really working like they'd like it to.
They do, and of course we pile more and more on teachers to try to insist, well, now you've got to do it this way and this way and this way. And, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. There's Common Core. There used to be outcome-based education. We've tried a lot of things for education reform. But I still think we're missing one great way, which is just to say, what's the point, education? So that if we really got down to the bottom line and said, look, the bottom line is, what do they need to know? And then how many ways can we get them there? That kids would finally go, oh, okay. I mean, you know, a lot of times they might sit still and pay attention and listen if they knew what the whole point of listening was. But we get kind of locked into just do your worksheet and do this and do that, and then you'll get your A and then you can graduate. And we forgot that the point of education isn't just surviving. You know, you hear parents say, oh, if we can just get through two more years, we'll be done. But the point of education is teaching them not only what they're learning, but teaching them how to learn so that the rest of their lives they'll be able to learn anything they need to.
And in a moment, we're going to come back and talk more with Cynthia Tobias about ways that people learn and just some of the amazing information and research that's available as we talk about the way that kids and really as adults, the way that we learn, even as Cynthia suggested, from the moment we got our DNA. And we're going to hear more from Cynthia Tobias, a successful background, including a couple of decades worth of business ownership and teaching high school and law enforcement, and author of a number of books. We're talking about the way they learn, how to discover and teach your child's strengths. Cynthia Tobias, we'd be honored to have you join the conversation, too, if you have a question about it, or maybe a story, too, just to weigh in on your experience, your learning school experience. 877-933-2484 is the number, 877-93-FAITH, or you can always drop us a note by going to the website, myfaithradio.com, and go to the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. You can send your question in that way as well, and we'll continue in a minute.
There's no shortage of messages in your life. Phone calls, text messages, face-to-face requests.
Mom.
But in the midst of your daily communication overload, find messages that build your faith and encourage your walk with God. Compelling stories, insightful podcasts, and ways to get involved. Get the latest from Faith Radio in your Facebook newsfeed when you join us on our Facebook page. Just search My Faith Radio on Facebook.com to join us today.
They sit at the head of the table, solve tough problems, and make the world a better place. They're not always famous. Sometimes they're servants, but they're always leaders. Become one with a master's degree from University of Northwestern St. Paul. Take classes online or on campus and gain a challenging, faith-based, affordable education alongside others in your field. Learn from the best. Lead where you are. Live a life of impact. Visit unwsp.edu. University of Northwestern St. Paul.
Give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see.
16 past the hour. Yeah. Talking today with Cynthia Tobias. Honored to have her with us today. Author of best-selling book, The Way They Learn, and is in the Best of Broadcast and Folks in the Family Radio for several years in a row. Has a successful background, includes business ownership, teaching high school, law enforcement, has authored 11 or so books. I think the latest is Middle School, The Inside Story. And she has been teaching about discovering how people have natural inborn learning style strengths and how to succeed in virtually any situation. I think there are many kids that don't succeed. We know the education complex in our nation isn't always that effective. So we want to find out some ways that we can do our part, I guess, as parents and concerned others. And Cynthia, maybe we just need to talk about, let's review the basics. Some of those, there are essentially, what, four learning styles? What are some of the fundamentals we need to know?
Well, of course, there are hundreds of combinations, and there is a distinction between learning styles and personality type. When we talk about cognitive, this is how you interact with information, communicate information, make decisions about it. So in this, there are hundreds of combinations, but in the book, we talk about four or five different models. But some of the real basics, for example, if you talk about everybody's familiar with learn by hearing, learn by seeing, learn by doing, the auditory, visual, kinesthetic. What we discovered in the research is that there's more to it than we originally thought. For example, everybody has all three pieces of that puzzle, so everybody does it to some extent. But if you have a real strong auditory part of your nature, then you really need to talk in order to learn. You have to hear your voice talk about it, ask questions about it. Words are important to you. You don't skip any when you're reading a lot of times. And if you have a teacher whose voice is kind of monotone, it's difficult to listen, and you're distracted sometimes when you don't even know it. Whereas the more visual learner, like I'm much more visual than I am auditory, my focus is what things look like, being able to picture in my mind what you're talking about. So if I can't track with you trying to get a picture of what you're saying, then I quickly lose interest. I'm going to watch a little more before I actually try something, so I may not be quick to answer you. I may not talk back to you as much as you want me to talk back to you. If you look at the kinesthetic style, which is my second biggest piece, it's not just learned by doing. It's a child or adult who really is born to move. If I can't put some movement with what I'm learning, or if I can't at least move while I'm learning, even if it's simple as sort of shifting in my chair or holding on to a pen or pencil or doing something with my body while you're talking to me, then all I'm thinking about is, I can't move. I'm miserable. When's the break? I can't move. So finding ways, for instance, when I talk to teachers, we talk about every time that you're teaching, you're doing three things. You want to give them something to talk about, give them something to think about, and give them something to do. A lot of times the kids who are supposedly not paying attention, well, they're paying attention to something, just not what they're supposed to be. So keying into some of their strengths helps us teach the kids themselves how they can focus and pay attention better instead of trying to change the teacher, which probably isn't going to happen because they've got 25 kids they're talking to. And it's very, very good for the child themselves to figure out, wow, why is this bugging me and what can I do to help? Once we look at those three modalities, then we can also look at the whole difference of how you approach information. You know, and we tend to marry opposite people. I don't know if you did, Neil. I know I did. I married somebody that's just the opposite of me when it comes to information and what's important to him. And so he's, you know, very analytical, very step by step. He needs to break it down in pieces. And I'm just the opposite. I'm this big kind of big picture, global learner who goes, okay, yeah, so overall what? And where are we going with this? And where are we going to end up? While that more sequential and analytic person is going, wait. I need more detail. I need a step at a time. Don't tell me where I'm going to end up yet. It'll confuse me. And so, again, you've got all those mixtures in any one classroom. It's no wonder that there's a lot of inattention, there's a lot of restlessness, and there's a lot of frustration and misunderstanding.
Is there one of these modalities that are more common than another, or has it changed over the years as, you know, research continues to study this? I mean, I guess I was wondering if, you know, maybe impact of media use, if that has moved us more toward one versus another.
It's interesting because, you know, I have my own opinions. I haven't seen any real empirical research on this. Back in the beginning, some of the pioneers of the modality research, Raymond Swassing and Walter Barb. Remember, Walter Barb did the Highlights magazine, and they did some of this research. And at that point, they said, well, the people that are mostly auditory, about 25% of the population, and visuals kind of 30%, and kinesthetic kind of 40%, which obviously doesn't, I mean, it's more than 100% because everybody has different ones. And then so I got to thinking, you know, a few years ago, I wonder with all the smartphones and all the visual stimulation and all that, does that change? But the interesting thing is, for example, you can have someone who's actually blind but still highly visual. And so when you talk to them, they've still got – I've talked to a couple different people who've been blind from birth, but they see pictures. It would be fascinating to know what the pictures look like. Or if you have a person who's deaf, they can still be auditory. And so the way that I think that kind of translates, even though we're bombarded by visual, for example, there are still kids who – like I've got twin boys. They're only 2 minutes apart, but – My visual son is really into texting, whereas my auditory son is still into talking. Even though they use a lot of the new media, you still see the preferences come through. Even when you're bombarded with a particular way, because of that wiring, it just still tends to come out. And then how you use the technology still is different from how another person uses it.
You talking about see the preferences. How early can you see those preferences? And I guess what should you be looking for as a parent?
Well, the research shows that from about 18 months on, you start to see patterns, but you stay really fluid in that first 5 years. But you watch for things like, even in play, you know, what are they doing when they're the happiest? And when they seem really focused and intent on something, you kind of just kind of take mental notes. Are they by themselves? What time of day is it? What's around them? What seems to help them be happy? And that helps build your knowledge base. You don't really have to have you know, a lot of formal testing on the learning styles end of things to start figuring out right away. Oh boy, I've got a chatterbox. You know, she sure likes to talk. Or I've got a kid who just doesn't even answer me sometimes, and he just doesn't seem to communicate much and hasn't talked much. Sometimes understanding that and watching that, it gives you a piece of the puzzle. It may not be the whole thing, but it gives you a piece of the puzzle to help you understand how to talk back. I mean, if we tend to talk to other people the way we want them to talk back to us, and they're probably doing the same thing. So if we really start tuning in and listening, it can tell us a lot about whether it's our child, our spouse, our coworker, about how they want the information. It's very easy to pick up in their conversation if you're listening to it.
So can you maybe give us an example of, even with your twins or maybe even your husband, how your big picture, he's analytical. I mean, your kids are different in their approach. So were you conscious in the way that you kind of brought up different issues or talked about certain things?
Well, it's like God gave me my own in-home laboratory, right? These identical twins that look like Pete and Repeat and only 2 minutes apart, and they're so opposite when it comes to learning styles and understanding and how they do homework and how they needed things. You know, it was, with Robert, it was always about, you know, let's talk more about community helpers. I want to do books that are fiction. I want to dress up like the book report character I'm talking about. Mike is much more analytic brother. And Robert, he wants to do his homework on his stomach on the coffee table all through fourth grade. Mike, he wants to be at that table. He wants to be quiet. He wants to do things in order. He needs to know when it's due and what it is, and he doesn't want to skip to the end until he's done. And you know, kids are just, they're just really different from the very beginning, even from their parents. You know, parents have turned to each other every once in a while and say, where did we get this one? Because he's not exactly like either one of us. What's going on? And so just understanding, you know, awareness is half the battle. It literally is. When you realize that your child isn't annoying you on purpose or isn't deliberately just trying to get bad grades, you can start figuring out, wow, I think I see what's happening here. His strength is really his worst asset in this particular class, because it's just the opposite of what's being called for. And once you know that, then you can deal with it by starting with the strength instead of just focusing on what the problem is.
You know, you're talking about awareness half the battle. I mean, I'm sure that's a challenge probably for the educator, the teacher as well, right? To try and figure out in the classroom, and to know that, you know, some of the kids aren't just being annoying on purpose. Others probably might be, but
it is. That was probably my biggest aha moment. You know, I'd been teaching for 4 years before I got into this, and I was a good teacher and kids loved me, but I just thought really that those like analytic and sequential kids, I thought they were wound too tight, because, you know, they'd come in and they'd always want to know where they're supposed to sit and what time this is going to happen and all this. And I thought they just needed to relax a little, you know, just chill out and be a little bit more relaxed. I didn't understand at that time that one man's security is another man's boredom. You know, and so I would want to keep them guessing, and I would give them all these creative ways to remember how to spell words. And then I found out later, you know, they'd finally say, well, no offense, but could I just have a list of words? It's more confusing to me to try to remember the stories you put with them. And so it was awareness for me was half the battle, too, going, oh, wow. And it's not like I can change completely as a teacher, right? And I've got 25 kids, so what I did was use the awareness thing, saying, okay, for you guys that need a lot of detail, this is going to seem a little vague, but hang on, because I'm going to put the detail to it in a minute. And then they could relax for a minute and think, oh, good, she knows it's going to drive me crazy. And then it actually didn't drive them as crazy. Sometimes as parents and educators, rather than – we can't do everything for everybody just the way they want it. But what we can do is sort of as we're going, you know, recognize and sort of validate, oh, this is frustrating for you, isn't it? I understand this is frustrating for you. I wish I could do it differently, but we really have to get to this point here. That's half the battle for the child, too, to realize I'm not dumb. It just doesn't make sense to me.
We're going to talk more about it as we unpack some of the ways that we learn and the ways they learn is the title of a best-selling book from Cynthia Tobias, How to Discover and Teach Your Child's Strengths. Cynthia has interesting background in education, business, and law enforcement, has written a number of books, and she's with us today on Connecting Faith. And you're welcome to join us as we talk learning styles and and the patterns and preferences. Our phone number is 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. We'll continue in just a moment. We're looking for ways that we can help our children learn more effectively, to understand the way they learn, and to help them succeed. And we have Cynthia Tobias with us today, who has done a great deal of research and has taught high school for a number of years, also is in law enforcement, has been a business owner, understands some of the important insights about how we have natural inborn learning style strengths and how we can succeed. And she's written some 11 books. Her latest coming out here this summer called Middle School, The Inside Story. We'll get to that a little bit. The one that we're referencing today is called The Way They Learn, How to Discover and Teach Your Child's Strengths. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 877-93-FAITH. Cynthia, you talked a little bit just before the break about kind of your early teaching experience. I'm wondering, were there some maybe other mistakes that you made, and talk about the difference it made when you maybe corrected those or approached it a different way.
Well, one of the things I taught in a public high school, and they often gave me kids that were supposedly not, they were the low achievers or the ones that we were just supposed to kind of babysit until they get out. And so I would have, after I came back with the learning styles information and talked to my class about it, they got excited. Because they realized for the first time, here was a teacher and an adult who was actually saying, just because you're not successful in school doesn't mean you can't be successful, because you have these incredible strengths that just don't fit in school very well. And so what I did right away was we divided up, for example, into the auditory, visual, kinesthetic groups and studied for a vocabulary test. And I said, you know, you can choose any group you want. The auditory group's going to drill back and forth, back and forth, back and forth out loud. The visual group is going to kind of draw pictures and have flashcards to try to figure out what the word is. And then the kinesthetic group is going to put actions, activities to the words and move around while they study. Well, first of all, everybody went to the group with their friends. But then when they realized, this doesn't work, you do this, but I just can't do it, then they found the group where it seemed to actually make sense. And out of 29 kids and an 80-question vocabulary test, 26 out of 29 didn't miss one single one. Hmm. And the other three still got an A, but they missed two or three. And then, you know, everybody said, well, you just probably studied for them and they, you know, probably cheated. And so I just waited for a couple of weeks and without warning gave the test again in a different format and got almost identical results. And the kids were so excited, because what had happened is they, instead of just doing it like you're always supposed to do it, they actually thought about, well, what does it take? I mean, what helps me remember it? What helps me focus and concentrate? And if I can do that for my students, then when they leave my classroom, I can get them to think about that the rest of their lives. They get into a situation in a college classroom. They get into a job situation where they have to do more training. And they get into a situation where, uh-oh, everything's opposite of what makes sense to me. This is boring. I don't understand it. I don't get it. Instead of automatically giving up, they can go, okay, boy, I know I'm going to need a study buddy, and I think I better. They can start going through a checklist in their head because of what they learned about their own learning style strengths, and then they get to have the ability to conquer anything if they really decide to, by using their strengths. You know, we focus so much on what's wrong that we forget that we can only build on what's right. So we build on the strengths in order to overcome the limitations, and if we teach our kids that, they have the power to decide whether they succeed or fail.
Cynthia, it's interesting you kind of alluded to the fact that there was some skepticism or sort of pushback from other teachers. Well, you probably just, you know, you gave them the answers or something. Do you find resistance still as it, when it comes to being willing to teach in a variety of ways according to someone's learning style?
Well, some of it is understandable, the resistance, because it's just another thing at first. And you think, oh, my gosh, the last thing I need is to have to do it a different way. Plus, as teachers, we kind of got used to this flavor of the month thing. Every year it's some different approach and some different angle and some different thing we're supposed to do. But one of the things that makes learning style so powerful and what breaks down the resistance is it's teachers helping to shift responsibility to the students for their own learning, so that instead of us being burdened with how am I going to reach 29 kids 29 different ways, it's us being able to say, I can help teach these kids to take responsibility for their own learning, because I can't succeed for them anyway. And so there are good teachers all over that they really resonate with this. The downside is, and the resistance often comes, that at least it was for me, I didn't get a lot of support above me. My administrators and some of those restraints, they were skeptical, and they were, why don't you just do it the way everybody else does it, and it fits better and it measures better? Because, again, if you think about it, if we're focusing on the wrong customer, we're focusing on, you know, the system, or we're focusing on the adults who run it, and they're the wrong customer. But we get trapped into saying, well, it has to look this way, and it's easier to just have an objective chart, and so we do what we can measure rather than what really works.
Cynthia Tobias, my guest today. She's a longtime teacher, been teaching people of all ages how to discover and use their natural inborn learning style strengths to succeed in virtually any situation. She's written several books, the one we're referencing today, The Way They Learn. And we've got Sanya calling in Minneapolis on the line with a question. By the way, our phone number is 877-933-2484 if you have a question for Cynthia Tobias today. Sanya, go ahead. You're on with Cynthia.
Hi, Cynthia. This is Sanya, and I have a second grader who's my son, who is known to be a logical thinker when he was tested in a slow processing speed. How can I help him be able to put his thoughts onto paper and be a writer? Because writing is really a struggle for him right now.
And how old is he, Sanya?
He's 8.
Yeah, this is a great time to kind of get a handle on that. And it sounds like, you know, he could, because of the slow processing, it could be just because he is, number one, maybe more auditory as far as needing to deal with words piece by piece. And he also may be much more abstract. I know my husband is a very slow at processing, but he's incredible intellect and incredible, you know, so many incredible strengths. And so what you can do is practice with him, even in short pieces, you know, saying, let's just practice doing something quickly and something that you might have to do in a classroom. Or if you have a time test, for example, my child with timed math tests, one of my boys, he could never get them on time because all he heard was the tick, 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 ding of the clock, and the pressure was so much that he couldn't get his thoughts out fast enough. So the teacher and I helped him figure out how to compete against yourself, and instead of being timed with everybody else, you time yourself at the beginning and record your time at the end, and then you try to keep beating your own best time so that you don't feel quite as much pressure from others. There are some other ideas and suggestions in The Way They Learn and The Every Child Can Succeed that can help you kind of walk through that with him. And again, awareness on your part is half the battle.
Yeah. And you could find that at CynthiaTobias.com, right, would be a good place to check.
Right. Right. We have some other resources there, too.
All right, CynthiaTobias.com. I was interested in Sanya's question sort of sparked it, I guess. What's the difference between a learning style and a learning disability? I mean, we hear a lot more, I guess, diagnosis of variety of things today.
Right, and there is a big difference. And learning, there are legitimate neurological, physiological learning disorders and disabilities. But what concerns me is that for every one of those, there may be 8 or 9 kids that get just kind of shuffled into a special ed classroom or get a label because they're inconvenient or because it's a different learning style that they have. And even if you take a group of kids that have the same neurological disorder, you still have, with every single kid there, you have different learning styles. And so how you treat that disability, how you intervene, the counselors that you find or the solutions that you find are going to be so much more effective if you understand the individual you're working with and not just dismiss everything as part of the learning disorder or disability. And, you know, ADD, of course, is way overused, in my opinion. And in informal studies, at least across the country where I've been, special ed classrooms, it turns out that 80% of the kids in there usually are much more global, big-picture, intuitive learners and not your detailed analytic kids that can get things done. So And then how you intervene and how you fix it depends so much on the individual child in order to get success.
Of course, I mean, we still value getting things done, right? So even if they have a different learning style, there's still a sort of a deadline, an outcome that we're hoping for, right?
Absolutely. In fact, accountability always stays intact. It's just that you can say, look, the bottom line is this. This is where we need to be. And what we encourage with kids that want to try new things and try something different when they find out about it, we say, you know, it's great. I'm going to give you a week to prove it works. And then if you can't prove it works, you can't keep doing it. You know, but if you can prove it works, then I show some flexibility as a parent. You know, you say, hey, in order to do my homework, I need to do it later in the evening. I need to eat or drink, and I need to have headphones on. And you say, oh, I don't think so. But they say, no, really, I could do my homework if I did it that way. You say, okay, prove that it works. And if they can prove it by getting the homework done and done well, you back away and go, wow, it would never work for me, but it obviously works for you because you proved it. But if they didn't get the homework done and it didn't change much, you just say, nice try. We won't be doing it this way again because it obviously doesn't work. And that's always we never say to a kid, well, you know, do whatever you feel like. We say, look, the bottom line is this. If you can find another way to get to that accountability, I'm willing to entertain the alternatives as long as you're proving it works.
Say a bit more about maybe setting up the environment at home for, different styles. I mean, does some needs the desk, others want to lay on the floor, and, you know, some have the piles, and others, got it all pinned up in a bulletin board. Just, how can we sort of help set up the right environment at home to be more conducive to study?
Well, depending on the age of your child, even as early as second or third grade, you can talk to them about it. You know, what do you think is going to help you focus at home to do your homework? You know, where do you want to be? Do you want to have anybody around you? So that you get them thinking about, and if they go, I don't know. Well, you know, would you like a couple suggestions? How about we experiment a little, and get them thinking about, well, what is it that you really need? I just don't feel like doing homework. Okay, I understand that. Don't blame you there. But when it has to get done, what's going to help you the most to just get it over with? For example, for me as a kid, and certainly for my more global, big picture kid, Rob, I was always the kind that I didn't want to do homework if somebody else was having a better time than me, right? I would be easily distracted. But if my mom and dad sat down at the same time I was doing homework and they did their work, either balancing a checkbook or reading a book or doing something, then I was okay. As long as everybody was suffering equally, as a kid, I could get the homework done. But now my analytic son, he's just the opposite. He doesn't want anybody around him, and he doesn't want to be among everybody else. He wants so you ask, you talk to your child and say, I notice it's taken you a while and you're really frustrated about the homework, and I don't blame you. I know it's frustrating to do it. What do you think is going to help? Let's try a couple things and see what happens, and just prove it works.
Cynthia Tobias is giving us some helpful practical advice, some hopeful advice, too, today about how we can understand more about learning styles, help our kids succeed, and maybe help us as well as we go through adult life as well. She's authored a number of books, including The Way They Learn, and her latest coming out this summer called Middle School, The Inside Story. We'll get to some of that as well. Cynthia has been on Focus on the Family a number of times. You maybe heard her on recently. Has a great background in education, business, and law enforcement. Joining us today, if you'd like to join the conversation, we've got time for your question or comment or story. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Or you can drop us a note online, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page for the email link, and we'll continue in just a minute.
Start your day the right way with Faith Radio Mornings.
Pet owners know how special these animals can become to us. On Wednesday's Faith Radio Mornings, author Marion Wells will share how dogs have been powerful instruments of healing, rescue, and inspiration.
At 7:40, John and Kendra Smiley join us, and they'll be giving us some help in deciding how much we tell our children, and then maybe even answer the question to ourselves, if I don't tell them everything, is that really a form of lying?
Faith News with Don Ruff and more on Faith Radio Mornings. It all starts at 6 a.m. on Wednesday.
Iowa, 47 past the hour. Talking to Cynthia Tobias today. She has a background, includes over 27 years in business ownership, 8 years of teaching high school, 6 years in law enforcement. She's authored 11 books and featured guest on radio and TV on many occasions, and has specialized in the area of learning styles and understanding our strengths and the way we learn, and a regular speaker at conferences and the like around the country. And we're talking about one of her books called The Way They Learn, How to Discover and Teach Your Child's Strengths. You can find out more about those and other resources online at CynthiaTobias.com. We're going to touch on her new book in a bit as well. I'm interested, Cynthia, I don't know if we've talked a little bit about maybe some tips for advocating for your child with the teachers. If you know, and maybe even, I suppose, going into the classroom for that review, you can probably discover a little bit about your teacher just by looking how the room's set up. But how do we advocate well with teachers?
You can, and one of the things, and I did a whole chapter in the book, Every Child Can Succeed, on talking to your child's teacher, talked to about 100 of my colleagues and said, let's just talk to parents about, you know, ways to approach us without putting us on the defensive. And one of the best tips that came out of that is, when you're talking to your child's teacher, well, first of all, you want to always try to be positive, and not just get a hold of the teacher just when you have trouble, but, you know, in the good times and bad. But when you're in that teacher conference, you start a lot of your sentences in four words. What can I do? You know, Mike doesn't really learn the way that you teach. I think that's very good for him to be able to stretch. I'm wondering, what can I do to help him understand? What can I do to help him be successful? So that you're letting the teacher know, I'm not expecting you to do all the adjusting. We're willing to adjust. I'm wondering, though, you're the educator. Can you give me some ideas on how I can help my child cope? And that lets the teacher know that you have done your homework and you do know your child. And then it puts, you know, some of the responsibility on them to give you some ideas, but it also takes some of the pressure off them thinking, oh, this is another parent that's going to want me to just bend over backwards and do everything special for their child. So the what can I do is probably the most practical thing I can tell you that can change things right away.
As we touched on earlier about the importance of sort of building in your strengths, but there is, I guess, a point to education is, if it's training for life, then we need to understand how to adjust and work around our weaknesses. So there's some value in kids being in an environment where it's not most comfortable for them all the time, perhaps.
Absolutely. And I think one of the best things is when a child can stretch themselves, but they know that they're stretching themselves on purpose. In other words, rather than be frustrated and irritated that they're, that, you know, nobody gets me and this teacher's boring and this is all dull, if you teach your child about their strengths, then they can identify why something is being frustrating and then stretch on purpose. So in other words, you can say, I'm restless and I can't move. So what could you do? Could you take something in class that you could just kind of hold in your hand or squeeze, or you could adjust so that even though you can't move in that particular teacher's class, you could find a way to adapt to the class. And again, you're shifting responsibility to the learner to say, you know, I tell high school students, I say, you know, it's great sometimes when you'll get a teacher that's just your learning style and it'll be a great match and that'll be such a wonderful gift, but it doesn't happen that often. And when you graduate from high school, sometimes the world will do exactly what you want it to. Hardly ever, though. So the world doesn't bend to you. You adapt and learn to accommodate and learn to succeed by figuring out what you need to succeed and taking charge of your own success. So one of the biggest things you can do for your child, one of the greatest things as a teacher or a parent, is to help them focus on their strengths, yes, but not to use as an excuse, to use as the starting place to say, knowing this about yourself, you can go into almost any situation and adapt to it and conquer it, because you're starting with your strengths and you're not using it to cop out or to give up or to say, I failed. You get to call the shots. You get to say, I know what I need to do in order to succeed.
Sounds kind of old school there, Cynthia, about the world doesn't bend to your whims. I don't know.
Yeah, funny thing about old school, though, isn't it? You know, because it's still true.
you know, and I bet this can make a difference, too, probably for adults that have maybe gone through and not had a good experience in school and realize that, you know, they really were skilled. They are able to learn. They have, you know, maybe just felt like they didn't have, you know, capabilities, but in fact are knowledgeable, yeah, in many ways.
Yeah, you know, I did a corporate workshop several years ago in Scottsbluff, Nebraska, and it was a group of train managers, and one guy came up to me at the break and said, I got a question, and he was just frustrated and angry. He said, I want to know, how come I had to be 54 years old before I ever felt smart or valuable? And I said, you know, such a good question, because we're trying so hard for so many kids as early as we can, as often as we can, to say you are smart and valuable. Sometimes school doesn't bring out the best in you, but it's important that we give this message to our kids, not just the message that you can do anything and don't worry about things, the message that says, do you have any idea how valuable you are? If you can discover what your strengths are, you can use them for good. You can use them to achieve things, not to just give up and just say, well, the world wouldn't do what I wanted it to, and people wouldn't give me things, so I just give up. Oh, no. The whole idea is you can succeed if you decide to and you want to. You are very capable of figuring out, using what you know you have and what God gave you, you can figure out how to succeed no matter what.
Every Child Can Succeed, one of the books that Cynthia's written, The Way They Learn, another one, the one we've been kind of referencing, how to discover and teach your child's strengths. A new one coming out this summer called Middle School, The Inside Story. And if we think about, feeling smart or valuable, it seems like middle school is where that takes a beating. Talk a little bit about what this book is about, what you discovered.
This was a lot of fun to do. My co-author, Sue Acuna, is still a full-time middle school teacher, and after 20 years, still loves it. And we talked to the kids themselves. We figured out with each other. Sue and I said, let's really get to the bottom of this. We said, who better to ask than the kids? And they were just real candid with us and taking what we know about learning and about education, but getting the kids' perspective on it. The subtitle of the book is What Kids Tell Us and Don't Tell You. And there are just so many insights that come from the hearts and lives of kids, and so much encouragement for parents to say, you know, if you don't get the kind of depth of relationship, the kind of relationship with your middle schooler that you need, then by the time they get in high school, they're going to struggle more, and it's almost impossible to get the kind of relationship to the depth that needs to be if you haven't started early. And at age 10 to 14, even though kids are just so frustrated with themselves and you're frustrated with them, we've come up with just some incredibly practical ways and great insights and encouragement for parents to actually enjoy the middle school years and figure out what in the world is going on.
Because it is, I'm sure it was, I have a few middle school scars, I'm sure. I'm sure you probably do as well. But it's not any easier today, is it?
It isn't. In fact, my boys, I tried to tell them in the seventh grade, that was our worst year for us, for with boys in seventh grade. And they would come home and say, oh, everybody hates me and I don't have any friends. And I'd say, everybody feels like that in seventh grade. No, they don't. Yes, they do. No, they don't. Well, later after they graduated from high school, I said, so was I right about seventh grade? And Mike turned to me and went, it was the worst year of my life. But once seventh grade was over, things, there's a certain amount of truth to saying, well, some things you just have to sort of soldier through, but knowing why it's going on, again, the awareness, right? Knowing why it's going on, it's just a little bit easier to take, and you can maintain that relationship with your child. One of the things I thought was most poignant about the middle schoolers, they really do want to keep a relationship with their parents. They don't want you to know it necessarily, and they're not going to say it as much, but they confided to us, over and over, I wish my parents could just understand that the reason I walk away is, or that the reason I do this is. And we knew that we had succeeded with our book, with the Tell Us and Don't Tell You, when Sue showed the cover of the book, comes out just this summer, just a couple months from now. She showed the cover to the kids and said, look, by the time July and August come, you'll be able to show your parents this book and point out what you said. And a couple of the kids went, we don't actually want our parents to know that we said that. So they were the anonymous informants of the book. Sure. It was a lot of fun.
Good. Cynthia, we just got about a minute and a half left or so. Maybe just a word of encouragement to a parent today, whether they're a parent of a seventh grader or, it's a high schooler or middle, whatever, and just feel like the child's not succeeding or struggling in school. What's your recommendation, your encouragement?
Well, my best encouragement would be to understand that, especially with our kids, they're practicing how to be adults with us, and they've got all this raw strength and talent and strong will and everything else that right now they're just trying to figure out, how does it work and how do I use it for good? So the things that they're getting in trouble for now with you and the things that are frustrating you now about them are probably, when they get older, going to be some of the very best assets they have and some of their greatest strengths. If we can figure out what those strengths are and help them learn to adjust to them and help them learn how to use it, then we know that they're not frustrating us on purpose, and they understand that they've been given great gifts, and they can look to us. They really do look at us to model how do we become an adult. And so it's one of the most important things we can do as a parent is to show them how it's done.
And as you said right at the outset, it's the very things that we got in trouble for at school. It's really what the world makes the world operate.
It is. Did you ever get in trouble for talking, Neil?
More than once, yes. That was kind of one of my main areas. So thanks for bringing
that
up.
Yeah, it comes in handy now, doesn't it?
Well, it does fill the hour anyway. So, and Cynthia, you've done a great job offering us some encouragement and wise advice. I appreciate you coming on with us today.
Thanks so much. Keep up the good work.
Cynthia Tobias joining us today. You can find out more on the resources, the books that she's written on her website, CynthiaTobias.com, T-O-B-I-A-S, CynthiaTobias.com. The Way They Learn, Every Child Can Succeed, and look for the new book coming out here this summer called Middle School, The Inside Story. And if you missed a part of today's broadcast again, you can always catch it online, get the podcast at myfaithradio.com, and then check out the Connecting Faith show page. And I want to encourage you to stay tuned here to Faith Radio. Susie Larson coming up and Live the Promise this afternoon has the opportunity to talk to John Ortberg about his new book, Soul Keeping. You won't want to miss that. 3 o'clock with Susie Larson on Live the Promise.